it's Arshavin. There'll be 2 minutes of stoppage time. Man in the box if he can get it across. And he has it off the line. Shot on goal. And it's turned in. And surely this time, Theo Walcott has won it.
Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli. Aguero.
What's going on here is header. And talk about an instant impact. Arsenal really are motoring now.
Lui, Francesco Totti, gran gol, Roma. Strepitosa in questa dia.
Fabregas, it's Nasri. Can he go all the way here? Still Nasri. Looks for Ashani. Wonderful play from Arsenal. Arsene Wenger's philosophy put into practice. And not even Barcelona can come up with an answer.
And oh!
Seattle Sounders in red, green, Toronto FC in red from head to toe. Cut back there from Osorio, feeding it through. Jermaine Defoe, an opportunity for his first MLS goal. 16 and a half minutes into his debut.
Welcome to another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Reggie. As usual, we can be reached at the website, www.footballweekly.com. That's football spelled F-U-T-B-O-L, weekly.com. I can also be reached on Twitter, the @ Reginaldinho. All that information, Twitter and where to subscribe, how you can subscribe to the podcast. It's all on the Contact Us page at the website. So www.footballweekly.com. Go to the Contact Us page and you can click to subscribe and you can go straight to the Twitter page. Pretty packed show today. We're going to hit a little bit of the German Bundesliga and talk about the top stories from that league. There's a couple of things I want to discuss about the MLS, particular TFC and the Montreal Impact. Pretty cool story out of La Liga. This past weekend, Barcelona played a little team called Eibar, I believe it's pronounced. It's spelled E-I-B-A-R, I believe. Pretty cool story. We'll get into that a little bit later. And as usual, we'll tour the EPL and end off talking about the Arsenal again. If we have time, we might preview El Clasico this weekend because that goes this upcoming weekend, Barcelona versus Real Madrid. I'll give you my predictions and things like that, but if we have time for that. But we'll definitely hit that recap next week. So as usual, sit back and take in the Football Weekly Podcast. So we'll start this week's show off in Germany. Won't get too deep into it. But we're going to talk about the top stories in Germany from the past week. In the Bundesliga, there was actually a coaching debut of someone that's familiar to us if you watch EPL. Roberto Di Matteo, who took over Schalke, I guess in the past month, coached his first game in the Bundesliga and walked away with a 2-0 victory over Hertha Berlin. Goal scorers were Julian Draxler and Huntelaar. Always liked Di Matteo, actually. Took over for, I believe it was, I can't remember who he took over for at Chelsea. And he actually guided them to their only Champions League victory. And only lasted, I believe, 4 or 5 games the next season, even though he hadn't lost. Chelsea's one of those teams that looks for big players and big name coaches, and I think Scolari came in after him. So I don't think the owner, Abramovich, ever really wanted to have Di Matteo coach the team, but he was the assistant at the time. Like I said, guided them to their only Champions League victory and only lasted the next season 6 or 7 games. So I'm glad to see that he's back Very smart coach, very tactically aware. I like to see him. I like to see him back in coaching. So, congratulations to him. Another surprise in the Bundesliga for me is the form of Dortmund. I know they lost Lewandowski to Bayern Munich over the summer, but they've had a couple of injuries as well. But I know Marco Ruiz is out, and another midfielder out as well. I can't remember his name right now. Yeah, they lost their fifth game of the season to Cologne 2-1 this past week. From what I read, I didn't watch the game, so from what I read, it seemed like Jurgen Klopp, the coach of Dortmund, was at a loss for answers in his interview. He said they played well enough to win. They had the majority of the ball, but once again, it's one of those games like I talked about last week where, you know, you get your chances, you got to put them in. Because the other team's going to get two chances and score two goals, and you're going to have five chances and score one, and you're going to lose. And from what I gathered from the comments from the coach and other people that are writing in the article, that's exactly what happened. They controlled most of the game, but they still lost. So it's very surprising to me, because when they played Arsenal, they looked great. As much as Arsenal looked bad, Dortmund looked great going forward, defending and chopping up the midfield. So I don't know how they lose form going into their league and play in Champions League like world beaters, but we'll see tomorrow how they fare. Actually, they have a Champions League game. Our group plays tomorrow. Arsenal plays Anderlecht, and I think Dortmund goes to Galatasaray. I think they're away to the team from Hungary. So we'll see how they do tomorrow. But that's a surprise to me in the Bundesliga. Like I said, I don't really follow it. I try to touch on all the leagues. I'm trying to get a German Bundesliga guy to get on the show as well, as a Spain and Italy. But like I said, I don't really follow it. But I was just surprised to see where they are in the standings and that they've lost five games of the season already. And I don't believe those five games are all in the league already. They've only won two and they've tied one. So that form is very surprising to me. And I know it's early in the season and things can turn around. But in any league that you're playing against Bayern Munich, you got to come out of the gate firing, or it'll be all over about the crying by December, right? So hopefully they can turn it around. I like Dortmund. I like the way they play. I like the way that Klopp has them prepared for every single game tactically. And they hardly ever stray from the tactics. Very tough to beat and very tough to break down. So hopefully they can turn it around and they can challenge Bayern Munich for the title. Last game we're going to touch on in the Bundesliga, the German machine that we just mentioned, actually, Bayern Munich beat Werder Bremen 6-0. I mean, what else is there to say? I'm not even going to go through who scored, because it's the usual suspects. Well, actually, one of them is not, actually. Xabi Alonso, for those of you that follow La Liga and EPL, played for Liverpool and Real Madrid. He scored his first goal for Bayern Munich this past week. Like I said, the usual suspects, Müller, Lahm, and Götze scored as well. So, can't see anyone beating them, actually. And today they played their Champions League game as well against Roma, and it was a beating. For those of you that didn't watch it, it was a beating. I believe the final score was 7-1 for Bayern Munich. And it was just, it looked like a training video, and it looked like Roma was down two guys the whole game. That's how bad it looked. And I actually had a soccer game our first game of our indoor season here in Canada. Is next week. So we got together and we played a little bit of sort of like a pickup practice type of thing yesterday. And we were talking about it after having a pint at a local establishment. And we were talking about upcoming games today and this week and blah, 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 blah. I think Real Madrid goes to Liverpool as well this week, so tomorrow, actually. So we were talking about all that stuff. And Italian friend of mine steps up and says, oh, well, what about the Roma-Bayern Munich game? And I don't like Serie A, so I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you, you have no chance. But to predict 7-1, I would never do that. 2-0, 3-0, and Roma has maybe one or two chances, and that's about it. But 7-1, I would never predict. But he wanted to argue that, Roma. And, you know, I always tell him this. Because you have a good team in a bad league doesn't make that team good. During the commentary today of the Bayern Munich-Roma game, commentators said that Roma was the second best team in Italy. And I think 2 minutes after he said that, they scored their fifth goal. Bayern Munich scores the fifth goal. If this is the second best team in Italy, and they're getting pounded, like they can't string four passes together, what does it say about the caliber of the league? I mean, I know you have Juventus that's just in first place, and they're actually the only team that's beaten Roma at home this year, this calendar year. It's Juventus, and they only beat them 1-0. I believe the commentator also said that they were 8 games unbeaten or at home or whatever. So no one's beaten them this season at home. Until Bayern Munich marches in and gives them 7. And it could have been way more. Could have been way more. Like I said, I play with a bunch of Italians, and you can't tell them that the Serie A is garbage league, because they'll take you back to when Zidane played for Juventus, talking about Maldini and Nesta when they played for AC Milan, and this was the best league. That was in the 90s. That was early 90s you're talking about. Like, it's 2014. Let's get with the times, please. You know what I mean? There was a time where Blackburn was the talk of the there was a toast of the town in the EPL, but that was in the 90s. You can't bring that up. Where is Blackburn now anyway? I don't even know where they are. In the championship? In League One? Where are they? I don't know. Can't bring that up. But my whole argument is this. If you're going to be an elite team, if you're going to say you're an elite team in Europe, you got to go out and face the elite teams in Europe and show up. I'm not saying you have to beat Bayern Munich 5-0 to prove anything to anybody, or me even. No, I'm not saying that. If Roma went out there and lost today 3-1 in an exciting game and had chances to win, kudos to Roma. But from the onset, 5 minutes in, it's just... 5 minutes when the first goal was scored. It was just... Or 7 minutes. It's just... What kind of defending is this? What are we watching here? And it was just all downhill from there. I believe it was 5-0 before Roma scored. And then Bayern Munich said, let's put the foot down on the gas a little bit more. And then they pumped 2 in. And then... they parked the car and left it there. And I believe if anybody watched the game, Roma coach didn't even shake Pep Guardiola's hand after the game. Pep Guardiola was actually looking around to see where Remy Gard was, the coach of Roma, and he just ran down the stairs. So I don't know if he thinks that Pep Guardiola was trying to run up the score on his team or whatnot, but yeah, there's no post-game handshake between the managers, so... We'll keep an eye on that and see what comes of that. But I don't think... I've played a sport. And I mean, when your team's better than someone, I mean, when you get a chance, I think it's more embarrassing to have an empty net and pull the ball back and pass it around back than it is to put it in the net. So what's a player to do? I mean, you get a chance, you shoot. You score. I mean, there's no running up the score. There's no running up the score in football or in any sport, I believe. If you have a chance to score, you take the chance. Because like I said, it's more embarrassing if you don't take the chance, I think. I mean, you have a chance to hit a layup. You're beating a team by 50 points. You have a chance to hit a layup and you don't go up. You dribble around some more. It's more embarrassing, I think. So getting back to Serie A, if you want to be taken serious by me, even by me, and this is all my opinion. If you want to be taken serious by me, you got to show and prove against the elite teams in Europe. Not the Bate Borisovs or the Ludogorets and the Maribors and whoever else is out there. Okay, you can slam them 4-0. That's great. But what do you do against Chelsea? What do you do against Barca? What do you do against Real? Man City? Teams of that nature. And I know Roma went to England and tied Man City. I know that. Man City's not going to win the Champions League. Okay? So, that's my whole rant on Serie A. And like I said, I'm trying to get a Serie A guy to talk to us. He's actually been on the show before. He's just trying to find some time where he can match my schedule and we can talk about Serie A. Like I said before, real life gets in the way sometimes. So, I mean, to match schedules, I'm doing the show tonight at 1:45 in the morning. So, this is the only time I could do it. So, that's the time I'm doing it. And I'm sure he's not up right now. So, to match schedules like with the guys that I want to get on the show is tough. So, hopefully I can get a set time with some of these guys and we can, maybe at 10 o'clock or something like that, and we can all talk about we can talk about Serie A, we can talk about La Liga, talk about Germany. And I still want to have that corruption show. So, that's other stuff for other days. Moving on to the Barcelona story that I was talking about. Actually, you know what? There's another story that I wanted to get to actually today. During my reading, I came across a funny article, actually a funny clip that I'm going to play for you. You know what? I'll save that for when we get to the EPL. I'll save that for when we get to the EPL. Sorry for the tease, but yeah, it'll make sense. It'll flow better if I do it when I do the EPL stuff. So we'll get into that La Liga story about Barcelona that I wanted to talk about, and it's a pretty cool story actually. This past weekend, Barcelona played a little team in Spain called the Eibar, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's spelled E-I-B-A-R. Barcelona, as predicted, would win because people have never heard of this team, so they only beat them 3-0. The cool thing about this game is the size of the club that they played against. Now, this club has been fighting to get up into the La Liga proper for the last 4 or 5 years. Started at the lowest leagues, and they've been working their way up to get into La Liga, the A division, Premier division. And it just shows the gulf in... Well, I can't even say the golf in class, but the golf in the amount of money that some teams have to spend, the amount of money some other teams are making or aren't making, I should say. There's a couple of stats, and I'll put a link to the article on the website so you guys can read that as well. It should be on the homepage. There's a couple of stats that caught my eye. I never heard of Eibar, so I was curious, so I kept reading. And they put, among other things within the article, they put a little chart up. And they compared Eibar to Barcelona. And I just pulled out a couple of things that stood out to me. So at Eibar Stadium, capacity is 5,200 people. Okay. Barca, at the Nou Camp, is 98,000. Give or take a couple of hundred, actually. The average attendance at an Eibar game is 2,900. Average attendance at a Barca game is 71,000. Again, give or take a couple hundred people. Eibar has only 2 international players that play on their national team. Barcelona has 24. The record transfer for this past year for Eibar was £60,000. And we know the record transfer for Barcelona this past season was Luis Suarez with 75 million euros. But one of the people that runs the Eibar club said that transfer fee, the 75 million, would run the Eibar team for 5 years. It would pay everybody for 5 years. It would pay for kit. It would pay for travel. It would pay for the food. It would pay for everything for 5 years. that one transfer fee that they paid for Suarez would run that club for 5 years. The annual budget of the team, and that includes travel, kit, shoes, paying the coaches, getting the grass cut, having electricity in the place, water, everything, blah, 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 paying the players, rah, 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 is 18 million euros. Barcelona, 540 million euros. 540 million euros to run Barcelona with the transfers and the running the new camp and paying players and coaches. And it's just, wow. This team has 18 million euros to spend per year to buy players and run the team. And they're coming up face-to-face with Barcelona in the league. And they're going to come up face-to-face with Atletico and Real Madrid as well, who are big-time clubs too. But the best stat for me is the last stat, and that's the team's debt. Eibar's debt is zero. Barca's is 287 million euros. Now, they may not fight for the La Liga division or championship. They may not be in Champions League. May not finish in the top three to get into Champions League. But for me to see a team like that rise all the way up to the Premier division of La Liga and fight it. They only lost 3-0. They only lost 3-0 to Barca, Messi, Neymar, Pedro, Iniesta. They only lost 3-0. I would have loved to have seen the game, but couldn't stream it. And, well, actually, I wasn't around to stream it, but I could probably watch it on a football replay app somewhere. So if I get a chance, I'll probably watch it, but doesn't seem like they ran away with the game. And I know Messi and Neymar and all those guys played because they scored. So I'd like to see it and be better equipped to tell you a little bit more about Eibar. But I thought that was a pretty cool story. And like I said, I'll put the link to the article on the website so you guys can have a read for yourself. Players like David Silva and Xavi Alonso actually went on loan at Eibar. David Silva went from Valencia, I believe, on loan there. And Xabi Alonso went from, I forget where he went from, to go on loan there. But, yeah, and they were actually talking in the article as well about how proud they were of the team, the way they came up, and class organization. And it seems to be run very well, you know. I'd love to see the Minnows come up and fight. So, good on them. So moving on from La Liga talk, we're going to move to the MLS. Oh boy. and my beloved TFC. I don't even know where to begin with this team. I don't know where to begin. Beginning of the season, it was great. They actually took $100 million and invested it in players. Brought in three great players, I believe. In Gilberto, Michael Bradley, and Jermaine Defoe. I mean, you couldn't walk around this city and not have people say, I can't wait for TFC to start. Not ashamed to say it, I was one of them. Maybe I should go get tickets. Or maybe I should find a way that I can get tickets to get to these games. And they go off and they play their first game in Seattle, a place they've never won before. And they go in there and they smash they win 2-1. And I've talked about this before, I believe, maybe the second episode. Everybody went crazy in the city. And like I said, I'm one of those guys. I don't get too high, I don't get too low. So I said, let's hold on and wait and see. And they were playing pretty good soccer. They were playing decent soccer. I should say they were playing better soccer than what they've played previous years. We just kick the ball and hope it bounces to your guy. And, you know, where the guys like us would just go to drink beer. It was a day out. Day away from the house and you drink beer. Who cares what the score is? This season was different. We have a chance to do stuff. We have a good coach, good team. We've spent money. They're expanding. They're going to expand the stadium, more seats. They're going to put a roof on it. It's going to look like an English style stadium. Yeah, okay. I'm in. Sure, let's do it. Went to a couple of games. Actually won. They won all the games I went to, actually. So It was nice to see, but I watched the away. But I watched most of the. I watched the majority of them on TV, and obviously the away games on TV as well. So, long story short, general manager, coach has a problem with the general manager. General manager has a problem with the coach. Fire the coach. Bring in new coach. Coach number 9 in 8 seasons. Yes, coach number 9 in 8 seasons. Who was actually, I believe, the assistant general manager. He was given the reins of, not the assistant coaches, the assistant general manager was given the reins of the to lead this team. Okay, whatever. We're in third place in the league. We're in a playoff spot. Your only job is not to screw this up. Well, 3 games ago, we needed 7 points to have any chance of making the playoffs. That was 3 games ago. We needed 7 points out of the 9. And you're hearing all the lines from the coaches and the team. Yeah, if we play the way we know how and the way, you know, the sports cliche crap that you hear, 110% this, 110% that, lucky bounces, all this crap that you hear. So they go to New York. And let me jump back a little bit. They got 2 away games left and 1 home game against Montreal, who was probably one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference this year for some reason. I don't know why. Just haven't been playing well. They were pretty good last year. They have a away game against New York, home game against Montreal, away game against New England Revolution. You need 7 out of 9 to help your own cause. Okay, to help yourself, you need 9 out of 9. But we could deal with 7 out of 9. Go to New York and get smashed 3-0. Wasn't even close this game. And the game before that, actually, they played Houston. They lost 1-0 at home. Which is one of the games where you're looking on the schedule and you're saying win, 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 win. That's one of the games, you know, that you say, yeah, it's a win. When LA, you see LA on the schedule, say, well, that's probably a loss. See Seattle, that's probably a loss. You see Houston, well, that's a win. Montreal this year, yeah, it should be a win. But they lost to Houston at home 1-0. Lackluster game. Freezing in Toronto that weekend. Team from Houston comes in. Men are wearing gloves, scarf, hat, and bust goal and beat you on your home field. Okay. It was freezing and it was raining. It was freezing out there and it was raining and you lost on your home field. Okay, whatever. Points dropped. Still got 3 games left. Now we need 7 out of 9. Okay? Ideally 9 out of 9, but 7 out of 9. Play New York Red Bull. Like I said, get smashed 3-0. Uh-oh. Now there's only 2 games left. 3 points for a win. Can't get 7 points. Now what do we do? But the team that's behind us, actually, or chasing us, or we're chasing, whatever it was, lost. So you see people wiping their brow. Oh, phew. Now if we win out their last 2 games and they drop a point in one of their last games, we're in. Whew. Got lucky there. No problem. So now you have to come out. Now you have to come out gunning in your last 2 games. And one of them's at home against a terrible team. Another one's on the road where a team that you should beat. Montreal game comes up. They're getting spanked left and right in this game. It was a disgusting display. A team that has to go out and win playing like that? I don't know. Game ends up in a 1-1 tie, I believe. Is it 1-1? I believe it was 1-1. It doesn't matter. They dropped the points anyway. So now they're done. Officially done. They have another game coming up this Saturday, but it's done. Not going to make the playoffs for the 8th straight season. There's teams that come in this league, expansion teams that come in this league, and make the playoffs in their second year, third year. We haven't been to the playoffs since the team started 8 years ago, 8 seasons ago. And I can guarantee you one thing, this coach is not going to be here next year. So we're going to go on our 10th coach. in 9 seasons. We've had 10 different coaches in 9 seasons. There's something wrong, right? It can't be the coaches, can it? Can't be. The players change all the time too, so what is it? What's the constant? Ownership? That's the only constant I see. Next year, New York FC is going to come in. They have Frank Lampard and David Villa. I think next season as well, the Orlando team's in. They've already got Kaká. And they're going to get a bunch, I guarantee you, they're going to get a bunch of Jamaicans and Cubans and guys from South America as well to come in and play. And I guarantee you they're going to make the playoffs before the TFC does. And that's all I have to say about TFC. They've seen me at their games for the last time. The last time I went. I will never go to a TFC game again. When you heard it here. I don't care if they make the playoffs next year. I don't care if they bring Diego Costa to the team. I'm not going. I've spent my money. I've bought my gear. My hat, my scarf, my jacket, my sweatshirts, my pants, my shorts. TFC, TFC, TFC. I've paid my money for tickets. I've paid my 12, 13 bucks for beer. I'm not going to any more TFC games. Even if you give me free tickets, I'm not going. You got to pay to get down there. You got to pay for beer and food. And I'm not giving TFC a dime of my money. I'm not spending any of my money for TFC. And I'm not the only person that feels like that. So, again, like I said last week, TFC, good luck to you. Another story in the MLS, keeping with that. Joey Saputo, the owner of the Montreal Impact, actually bought, and him and another partner, a lawyer from New York, went and bought Bologna, the team in the Italian Serie B. I believe they're in Serie B now. They bought the team, and they're going to have links with the Montreal Impact. Bologna Academy is going to be sending players over to Montreal. Montreal might be sending players on loan to Bologna, and you know, those players are going to benefit. Those players are definitely going to benefit from that, and that's another team that's going to make the playoffs before TFC does. You know, you got players like Luke Moore and Jackson and Osorio, and these guys are garbage. These guys are on the bench of any team in the MLS that makes the playoffs. These guys are on the bench. We're starting them hoping that they score for us so we can get to the playoffs. But anyways, Montreal Impact doing it right, actually. The players that they draft are probably going to go over and train with the Bologna team, you know, get their feet wet in the European style of soccer, and then try and bring that back over here or bring it back to North America and play that way in this league. In the next 2 to 3 years, Montreal is going to be a force. They have a huge Italian population in Montreal, so they're going to fit in. They're going to fit in fine, the players that come over from Italy. And the players, and hopefully the players that they send over to Italy, learn something from all the teaching. So that's another team that's going to be ahead of Toronto making the playoffs. It's so frustrating. This team had so much potential. Well, it probably still does have potential because we're a city of losers here. We'll pay for anything. Pay to watch the Leafs, shit the bed every year. Pay to watch TFC do the same. I have a couple of friends that I play soccer with season tickets. You're going to renew your tickets next year? Yeah, of course. Paying $1,000 a seat. The day I give TFC $1,000 of my hard-earned dollars, you gotta check me into the loony bin. Straight goods. Moving on. I'm going to touch the EPL now. Like I said earlier, I have a little bit of a clip that I found during my reading. It's Harry Redknapp, former coach of Tottenham, who's now coaching QPR, talking about one of his players. If you're familiar with the EPL, you've heard of Adel Taarabt. He's a Moroccan international. Maybe not the most fit player definitely lazy. But when he wants to play, he's probably one of the best in the league. But when he wants to play and when he does play, and what he does on the field is two different things. They're three different things. But I just listening to this clip, how can this player play for this team ever again after what this coach just said? And I'll shut up and you guys can listen to the clip and judge for yourself. Here we go.
No, he's not fit. He's not fit to play football, unfortunately. He played in a reserve game the other day, and I could have run about more than he did. So, no, I can't pick him. I'll pick people that want to try and deserve to be at a good football club like QPR.
You got 3 years left, my friend.
You're going to die.
A good football club like QPR. Really, Harry? Continue.
And want to work and come in every day and want to work and train and show a good attitude. And that's what I got today from the players. When he starts doing that, whether he ever can do it, maybe he'll get a game. I can't keep protecting people who don't want to run about and train and about 3 stone overweight. What am I supposed to keep saying? Keep getting your 60, 70 grand a week and don't train. What's the game coming to? I do my best. I do my best every day. I come in early every morning. I'm in the training ground early. I leave late at night. I love my job. And I do my best. Can't do any more. There ain't no one could do any better at the moment than me, I don't think. Oh, yeah, other names mentioned. I don't think they couldn't do any better than what I can do. That's for sure.
The last part of that clip is so interesting to me, where he says he doesn't think anybody can do better than him at the position. QPR is languishing in the bottom. I think they're one of the three teams that is going to, if the season ended today, they'd be relegated. Terrible team. Terrible football team. And that's why I put the Anchorman clip in between when he said a good team like QPR. Good team like QPR when? 40 years ago? QPR hasn't been good for that long. But I know he's got to say that. He's the coach of the team, whatever. What else is he going to say, right? But this past week, David Moyes said he's ready to come back to managing. So maybe a question was asked, or maybe a comment was made about David Moyes coming over and taking over QPR. If you're losing that many games the way they're losing, how can you be the best person for the job? If you go and lose 100 games, I mean, you can't be the best person for the job, can you? Does he really think that? And I know he's smarter than that. He's coached to high levels. He's coached West Ham. He's coached Tottenham when they were winning. So he knows what it takes. Well, maybe it's the players that he has. Maybe it's the tactics they're using. I don't know. But a change is definitely needed at QPR. Definitely needed at QPR. Played Liverpool this past weekend. They scored 2 own goals and lost 3-2. And they scored an own goal in like the 91st minute or something like that. It's ridiculous. And you could say it's bad luck, it's bad this, whatever. It's been happening for years. So I don't know. I was reading and I thought that was funny. It's like, how can Tarap play for this guy ever again? It's impossible. It's impossible. I was reading another comment actually that he made that was cut out of the clip. He was talking about how the player was 3 stones overweight. Tarap took a picture and posted it on Instagram of him with his shirt off, showing that he's not overweight. And Harry Redknapp made a comment, "Yeah, I could look good too if I sucked in my stomach." So I don't know. Obviously, those two don't get along, and it's either him or the player that's going to leave. But I think it's going to be the player that leaves. He's played on about 4 teams in the last 4 seasons, and it's always the same. He's a crazy talented player, just lazy. And I kind of side with Harry Redknapp. The guy's lazy. I know he's lazy. I've seen it. One of those guys, if the ball doesn't come to my feet, I'm not going to take 2 steps to the left to get it. It has to come right to my feet. And when you're playing in the Premier League, that just doesn't cut it. It might cut it in Italy. It doesn't cut it here. So, it doesn't cut it in the EPL. So, something to keep your eye on as well with that. Wanted to just touch up on a team in the EPL as well, Southampton. This team is amazing to me. Their academy has to be one of the best in England. And there's Chelsea and Man United and Arsenal and this, that, and the third. But this academy has to be one of the best in England, if not top five in the world. The players that this academy has produced is out of control. They produced Oxlade-Chamberlain, that plays for Arsenal. They produced Theo Walcott, that plays for Arsenal. They produced Gareth Bale, went from Tottenham to Real Madrid. They produced Adam Lallana. I mean, the amount of players that they've sold, that they've produced, could make an all-star team. And there's another article that I read, the Southampton sold top 11. And it's crazy. It's crazy, the players, if they were able to keep these players, what kind of team this team would be. We're all talking about Chelsea and Man City now. We'd be talking about Southampton. And I'll post that on the website as well. This past offseason, they sold, I mean, it's unlucky if your name has an L in it. If your last name starts with an L or your first name starts with an L, unlucky for you. They sold Adam Lallana, probably one of their best players on their team. Sold Ricky Lambert. Pop goals, hard work with the pop goals. They sold one of their defensemen, Dejan Lovren. And they sold their left back, Luke Shaw. So in the offseason, you're thinking, before the season starts, you're thinking, where are these guys going to get goals from? Adam Lallana was the playmaker that set up everybody. Ricky Lambert was that hard-nosed guy that put everything in. Luke Shaw was the guy bombing down the wing, crossing balls. And Lovren was the guy in the middle that made sure that no one got through. What are these guys going to do? Well, they got a new coach. Ronald Koeman comes in, takes over the squad, takes some players from their academy, brings them up. And here we are talking about Southampton in second or third place in the EPL and looking good. They just beat Sunderland 8-0 last week. And I know Sunderland's not a world beater of a team, but to beat anybody 8-0, it's something to look at. It's something to watch. It's something to see. So I just wanted to bring that up. If you're able to watch a Southampton game, take it in. They play nice football. They move the ball along the ground. They're not a punt and run team. They're pretty intricate with their passing. Play very well. Very well. And it's just they sold four of their best players this past offseason. And like I said, second or third in the EPL. Maybe 3 or 4 points out of first place. And they're going about it and doing it the right way. You beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And maybe pick up a tie against the Chelsea. When you're chasing teams, it's not drop points. It's a point gained. I'd like to give a slow golf clap. Not a golf clap, sorry. That's disrespectful. But I'd like to give kudos to the Southampton. Running the team properly and running the club properly and making strides. I'd like to see it. Well, another weekend comes, another weekend goes. Another Arsenal game, another Arsenal disappointment. This week it was Hull's turn to come in and show Arsenal how bad they really are. And for most of you that have been listening to this podcast for the last, 7 episodes or so, or 8 episodes, whatever we're at now. I think this is the 8th, so the past 7 episodes. You're going to hear a familiar theme from me this episode again. You can play back all the other episodes, and when I'm talking about Arsenal, it's the same garbage. Same garbage. Squad selection. Well, actually, I shouldn't even say it for this game, because he has no choice now, because he screwed himself, pretty much. But we'll get into that a little later as well. My first issue with this Arsenal team, there isn't any cover. And when I say there isn't any cover, I mean there's no adequate replacement for anybody in our starting 11. And I know you can't have world-class players. You can't have 22 guys world-class. I know that. But you still need to have serviceable players. And you can't be playing players out of position and hoping they're able to be up to the challenge. You have the opportunity to buy players in the offseason. You sold players in the offseason. But you didn't bring anybody in to replace them, hoping that somebody else in another position will fill in if we need. It's almost like he thinks, Arsene Wenger I'm talking about, that our starting 11 will play every single game this season and no one will get hurt and no one will get tired. And it's like a video. It's like FIFA 15 on PS4. We can play him all game. No problem. 10 in a row. Play Champions League, fly off to your international games, come back, play in the league, play League Cup, Capital One, FA Cup, go play Champions League for 60, 70 games a season, and it's with the same 11 players. No one's going to get tired, no one's going to get hurt. That's what it seems like. That's what it seems like when I watch this team, when I watch him work his magic in the transfer windows. Got some news today that our backup goalkeeper that we bought this past summer to back up Chesney, David Ospina, Colombian goalie, he's out for 3 months. Okay. So now what? Well, now our third string goalkeeper has to play tomorrow's Champions League game because our first string goalkeeper got a red card last game. So he's suspended. So you're going to throw in a 19-year-old goalie, I believe, with a makeshift defense in an away game Champions League. Now, nobody can predict the future. But what I've been hearing is that Ospina has had this injury for a while, and we bought him anyway. So you're pretty much buying a player that has a pre-existing injury. And he's re-aggravated it, and now he's gone for 3 months. So now we don't have our second-choice goalkeeper for the next 3 months, which is January. And we don't have Mesut Ozil till January. And we don't have Debushi until January. And we don't have Giroud until January. And we're hoping that Theo Walcott can come in and and score goals so that we can at least stay pace for where we are. And where we are is not very good. I think we're in ninth place. 12 points out of first, 12 points away from Chelsea. We're not catching them. So this league's, for Arsenal, it's done. Now it's the fight for fourth, like it is every year. I have a friend of mine who's a Manchester United fan, and his wife is a Barcelona fan. And every time she sees me, she's, hey, forever fourth. And I was like, hey, not this year. Not forever fourth this year. And I call her husband Seventh Heaven for Man U last season, but he knows better than to talk to me about soccer football. This year, anyway. Next year might be a different story, but it's the fourth place trophy again, or the third place trophy. Because Southampton, like I said earlier, Southampton's playing well, and they've already beat us in the Carling Cup this season at the Emirates. So I know they're not afraid of us. Oh yeah, because Shelny's hurt too, by the way. So we're playing Hull last weekend, and Hull's first goal. Actually, was it their first goal? Was it the first? Second goal. The cross came over. Everyone was looking at Mertesacker, saying, oh, Mertesacker, 6'4", should have had the ball out, should have known where the player was, and whatever. That goal is not Mertesacker's fault. That goal is Jack Wilshere's fault. And every team that I've been in, every high-level soccer team that I've played on, the coaches are always stressed on us. Don't let the cross in. Don't let the cross in. Don't even let the cross in. Shut it down. Ball went out to the wing. Jack Wilshere sauntered over with that, you know what, I'll get there when I get there type of attitude. The guy crossed the ball and he scored off a header. I blame Jack Wilshere for that goal. And if you want to go back and look at the video and the lead up to the goal, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. If he had just sprinted 60%, that if the person who crossed the ball would have probably had to cut it back and done something else with the ball. Well, he's just getting over there, you know, and I'll get there when I get there. And I might stick my leg out, I might not. Who knows, whatever. We're Arsenal, you're Hull, we're at home, we'll win. That type of attitude. And then the ball's in their back of our net. 2 seconds later, the ball's in the back of our net. Have a look at that clip and tell me I'm wrong. Please. Players that play terrible. Players that play terrible. Stay on for the full 90. Mesut Ozil played against Chelsea when he got hurt. Comes off at halftime and says, yeah, you know what? I heard a crack in my knee. Arsene Wenger goes, yeah, don't worry about it. A crack in your knee? That's no problem. Don't worry. Finish the game. Now Mesut Ozil's done for, till January. He did some ligament damage in his knee. I heard a crack in my knee. Yeah, don't worry about it. Go play. That always happens. Okay. So getting back to players that are playing like garbage. I like Oxlade-Chamberlain. Don't get me wrong. Played like garbage. Full 90 minutes. Full 90. I would have taken this guy off at half. Got a player on the bench that is the captain of his national team, who played the week before an international game and was running the show, sitting on the bench. And you've got Bumble, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who can't control the ball this game. He had a terrible game. Can't control the ball. Every touch he takes, 10 feet in front of him. Every time he tries to dribble, it goes off his shin, off his knee. But take him off. You got Rizicky sitting on the bench. Put him on. Those are the type of players you need in these type of games. Veteran head. Good touch, good skill, good vision. Those are the type of players you need when you're losing a game you should be winning. At home. Against a team you're supposed to be head and shoulders above. I just don't understand the team selection. Like I said earlier. Playing players out of position and hoping that they do the business for you. I don't know what team does that. Maybe once or twice. But it's the same every year with this team. We're playing Nacho Monreal at center back. Not a center back. He played well on Saturday. But that's not the ideal player you want there. We got lucky because Hull went up 2-1 and decided to park the bus and put everybody back. Because if that was Chelsea, it would have been a nightmare. Diego Costa would have eaten Monreal, shit him out, and then kicked him about the field. Another thing Arsenal doesn't do, that they don't do. They won't change the tactics. If something's not working for 60 minutes, stop doing it. Hull went back. Hull scored their second goal to take the 2-1 lead. And it turned into park the bus, everybody sitting in the 18-yard box and head and kick the ball out as far as you can. And we'll leave one guy up top and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to hit them on the counter maybe once or twice in this last 30 minutes of the game. We'll go up, we'll keep the ball at the corner flag for 5 minutes and waste some time there. And give the defense a little bit of a break. Get them up the field a little bit. And get ready for another 30 minutes of defending. What would you do in that situation? If there's only one striker from the other team. What would you do? And everyone's playing. They're playing five center backs pretty much. What would you do? You know what I would do? I'd go to a flat two at the back. I would put Mertesacker and Gibbs at the back. And that's it. Would take off one of the defenders and put a forward on. And if one of my midfielders is playing like shit, like Oxlade-Chamberlain was, I'd take him off and put another forward on. You want to play five at the back? No problem. You want to play three forwards. And then three midfielders that can run through you as well. And you can deal with that. But nope. Nope. They got one forward. We got four defenders out there. Eventually, we take off a midfielder and put on Podolski. Eventually, we take off... who came off, actually? Anyways, I don't know who came on. We put on Ramsey. Ramsey for what? Ramsey's been hurt for the last two or three games. You're putting him in a position where now he has to come and stress himself out to get the winning goal or to try to make something happen. When people come off injuries, you ease them into playing until they're back up to their level that they were before they got hurt. You don't throw them into the fire and say, hey, buddy, we need a goal. If you don't score, hey, man, it's up to you. You don't do that to players. Especially when you have a Champions League game coming up that week and you have another league game coming up the next Saturday. Bright spot of the game, though, is Alexis Sanchez and Santi Cazorla. Both those guys should be the top five names on the list when the manager writes it out. Santi Cazorla played amazing. Amazing. That's what we bought. That's what we paid $30 million for. Kid is always moving. It's like the Energizer Bunny, always all over the place. Dribbles, cuts, shots, vision, running, tackling, running. So predictable, Arsenal. So predictable. We're going to play with one forward with our mobile midfielders that can interchange. And we're going to pass until we get to the six-yard box. And maybe somebody will shoot. Maybe. Everybody knows Arsenal's going to play that way. You got to find something different. Don't you? Maybe 17 years is too long. Maybe it is time for a change. Maybe it is time for a coaching change. Someone to bring in some fresh ideas, some fresh tactics. Nobody's above the team. Jose Mourinho got let go by Chelsea before. You know, very successful coaches have been let go. Maybe it's time for fresh tactics. Maybe it's time to get rid of the attitude that we're Arsenal and you're not. And no matter what you put out and what I put out, we're still going to be better than you. Not anymore, man. You can't play a Michael Arteta at defensive midfielder, which is probably what's going to happen tomorrow in the Champions League game. You can't play him there. I saw a stat, actually, when I was reading that Callum Chambers, the right back for Arsenal, played with Southampton last year, and I forget how many games he played, and didn't get one yellow card. We're, what, 7, 8 games in? He already had his 5 and served a suspension for yellow cards. I don't know what that tells me, but it's something. And I've been fighting with myself and arguing. Maybe it's just bad luck. You know, Giroud breaks his ankle, Debushi ligaments, Ozil his knee, Walcott his knee, Ramsey his hamstring, Ospina his thigh, Gibbs, whatever, Diaby everything, Arteta his thigh, or calf, whatever it was, Jack Wilshere's always getting hurt, Koscielny his Achilles, but I've just named, what, 9, 10 players? Out of our 18 that are key components of our squad hurt, you don't see that on any team. You don't even see that in hockey or football, where guys are flying around hitting each other as hard as they can. You don't see that many injuries on nine starters out on a football team. When? Where? Is it bad luck? Bad training? What is it? Well, they play Anderlecht tomorrow in Belgium. Champions League. Very interesting to see what squad they put out and how well they do. I don't even know who they play on Saturday. I was just so disgusted with the game. Their last league game. I don't know. I don't know. I hope the next show we can talk about something a little bit more positive when we're talking about Arsenal. But I don't know. We'll see. But the next show will definitely be a Champions League review. I'll probably wait till after El Clasico as well. We can talk about that. But that's all the time I got. As usual, you can hit the website and subscribe on the Contact Us page. Follow me on Twitter. Go back to the website. I always put something on during the week. Last week I put Arsenal. There was a Street Fighter version I found on YouTube, a Street Fighter version of the Arsenal-Chelsea game. It's pretty funny, actually. Check that out. So, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.